My legal name. My middle name's Andy.
Okay. Hi, everyone. We are live. This is another episode of On.NET, a show where we discuss all things .NET with guests and the .NET team. And I'm Bertrand Leroy, and today, from the .NET team, we have Stacy and Rich. Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
And hello. And our guest is Andy.
Hello.
And today we are going to talk about gaming, but a very special kind of gaming.
Yes.
Console gaming, but not the console gaming that everybody thinks about. Not PlayStations, but text console. Gaming in the console. So text gaming and stuff like that. So indie gaming and all that sort of stuff. So, Andy, what do you have to show us?
Well, yes, console gaming, but what it's doing instead is emulating old text console games from, you know, the 70s, the 80s, and into the 90s that were, you know, pretty popular when graphics were at a premium and not everybody had that, but everybody had text mode, EGA, CGA, and VGA. So
that sort of thing is clearly a work of passion, right?
Yes. It's not going to make me any money. There's very few, like, going on to Steam, you know, in online stores, you can find a few projects that have kind of broken through and are published, and, you know, they're on the very cheap side of the pricing tier, but they still have garnered a popularity and have made it to where they're actually sold. And there's a few other games that are coming out, too, that are sort of sold in their own personal stores that are very comprehensive strategy, still all text-based, that are exciting and fun and still, you know, fresh. Even though it's an old presentation style, the game is modern in its you know, systems and combat and, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah, so we see a lot of 8-bit style games and a lot of pixelated games, and of course we all think about Minecraft, which is the prime representation of that trend. Is it all about nostalgia? Why is that something that rings with people?
Yeah, you know, I think for people who develop those types of games, it can be nostalgia because it's something they either grew up with and they have fond memories of, so that they want to recreate those, you know, with any type of nostalgia. Then I think you have another category of people who either get into them from friends or they see something neat because, you know, now that we're using modern technology to recreate old presentation style, you have, you know, smooth animation with text, as opposed to back when you're on, you know, an 8088 or something like that, you didn't have a lot of animation type of stuff. And then you have the old BBS scene, people who grew up doing BBSs and stuff and playing with ANSI graphics. And so I think there's still a lot of different facets of how text and art have penetrated subculture and are translating now into people who are growing up and seeing these types of artworks, and so they're kind of getting into creating their own through gaming.
Makes sense. So can you show us an example of what this looks like?
Yeah, so I have... So what I did originally was about 10 years ago, I started playing with .NET, and I was, you know, hired as a developer at a place, and so my pet project was, I think at the time, was recreating Zelda from the Super Nintendo in Visual Basic 6. It was maybe more like 15 years ago. And eventually when we moved to .NET, I started playing with text and trying to find ways to present text in a smooth, go past the limits of what we had originally, because, you know, it was 16 colors, and I think if the background was only actually 8 different colors you could choose from, but the foreground you could choose all 16 or whatever. So coming into modern programming languages, using modern display techniques, I was like, well, let's break the barriers. Let's do more colors. Let's do higher resolutions. And so I started experimenting a long time ago with finding different ways using GDI rendering and then trying to fit that into a Windows Form app, you know, and render that way. And then WPF came around, so I started exploring, well, how can I use the text elements in WPF to render things? And so it's been a long time of just experimenting and playing until I finally settled on sort of what I'll show. The way...
Your screen's not sharing.
I know. I keep talking, and I keep stopping going to share the screen. Go to the right tab. Let's see. Layouts. There we go. Okay. I think that's sharing correctly now. Yes. Okay. So part of the problem of working on a game engine is you don't really end up making a game yourself because you're just working on features in different ways. So over the last year and a half or two, I started to get people using it by promoting it through Reddit and, you know, different avenues. And so now I'm like, the best way to present it is to make a game with it. But the problem is when people start using it, you're back to, well, I got to fix bugs. I got to, you know, implement features. I got to write tutorials, you know, and do all this other stuff. So one thing I did is create a starter project, which is what I'm demoing right now. And this is kind of just goes through basic features of the engine, but it's all... The whole engine's open source, so these are more also used as code tutorials to show somebody how to use SAD console to implement a specific console text feature. So in the demo, the first screen that you get is just sort of demoing cursor. So it recreates a virtual cursor, since, you know, we don't really have cursors in a game engine, and allows you to, you know, it responds to typing and text and as fast as possible. And so that's a really basic first screen. The second screen, I've started to add, now that the engine itself is really pretty complete, I've started to add, well, what are helpers to help game makers create stuff? So I started doing random world generation and things like that. So this actually, the way this one works is we have two consoles. We have one, which is the map, and that's actually a, I don't know, I think like a 2,000 by 2,000 cell console. And the size of the cells is really small. It's like a 4x4 pixel. So I've taken what you have as text and then shrunken it up so that it looks like pixels. But it's actually running text, so you could write text in there if you wanted to, but these are just using, you know, background color. And then I have a second text console layered on top of that, which is the text at the top that says, you know, push the space to generate a new map and stuff like that. So it's not going to come through very smooth and scrolling because of Google Hangouts, but it moves perfectly fine on my screen and is nice and crisp and clear, so keep that in mind. So that's a helper that I've recently done. This one kind of shows...
So this was still all text.
Yes, it's all, yeah, all text, which, so when I say text, it's running on MonoGame, which is a re-implementation of Microsoft's XNA, and it's actually using sprites. So I'll show you sort of how that works in a bit, but I am using a sprite sheet to get all the text to render to the screen, and then I'm mapping where are those individual text elements in the sprite sheet, where are those located versus what character you've actually typed into the keyboard or into the console, and it figures it out and prints it. So it's rendering in a new way, but it's emulating an old system of, you know, print text to screen, and it knows how to translate that. So I'm actually not using any sprites in the traditional sense of where I'm using individual graphics and animating and flipping through them or doing something like that. I'm actually using a text sheet of all the characters in the 0 through 255 character range. The other part, so this screen sort of demonstrates the kind of what you used to do besides the gradient stuff. You know, coloring a specific character, setting the background, setting the foreground, having a blinking effect of what you would sort of do with the older games. And then I've added stuff like, you know, using coloring to create gradients and stuff like that. Let's see. This one also shows in kind of a zoomed in. So this is instead of the standard 80 by 24, I think is what the old screens used to be, this is doubled. So I think it's 40 by 20 or 14 or whatever it was, 12. To show that you can sort of zoom in and out and change how big characters are. This is using the same sprite sheet for zoomed in or zoomed out. Let's see, I have, you know, shape helper stuff, so you can draw squares, lines, circles. You can do fill. I'll show some of that later. So this emulates using a prompt. So doing like commands and scrolling, you know, help. Hey, we don't have any help. Doing old text adventure, you know, look, stuff like that. So this is just sort of demonstrating how would you use this if you wanted to create an interactive prompt or do a text adventure or something like that.
And really, so if somebody's working with this, technically they could end up merging the two, right? They could use the graphical kind of elements to draw out the image for them and then use the prompt to force navigation. In my mind, I'm going to like King's Quest 1, I think was.
Yeah, so because it's running on a modern game engine, you can mix and match elements. So, for example, you can have a completely 3D adventure RPG or something like that, a steampunk, a futuristic role-playing game. Mm-hmm. And then you could have SAD console on a computer terminal, you know, and then make sure it renders whatever face of the 3D object, and SAD console will be rendered right there. You know, so you can mix and match however you want using this game engine.
That's pretty cool. It kind of reminds me of Day of the Tentacle in their Maniac Mansion style.
Yeah, yeah. And the other thing, too, is if you had a game where you wanted to, like, Quake, you hit the tilde key and the prompt comes down. You could use this to do the text and the stuff. I mean, I don't know how practical using this to do that, because this is more about showing really crisp and clear text versus you could use, you know, normal fonts or something like that. You know, it might be easier to do something like, but you could still do it if you wanted to. But that's how it's just presented in that way right now. Oh, so I'll get to more of this later, but I've also built an entire GUI library using this. So, for example, this is a button, and it reacts to when the cursor moves over the button, how it displays, and it responds to a click event, which pops up a window, and, you know, the window snaps to the specific cells, stuff like that. So I actually have a really deeper demo to show on this that I'll get to later, because this is more, like I said, this is the starter project. It just shows you, how do I create a button? How do I pop up a window? It just shows basic coding.
Still, that's really, really cool. I mean, if you need to view an inventory list of a space shooter or an RPG character, you can just pretty easily tie that to some button to pop up a window, and you're not kind of fighting for real estate.
Yeah.
So I take it that the you know, your framework or, you know, your engine is basically doing hit testing around that show button. Is that how that works?
Yeah. So it's just reading the standard keyboard and mouse inputs that the actual mono game is giving me, and then I'm just doing hit testing. Is the cursor over this, you know, certain spot? Where is it? Element, and then reacting to all that.
Very cool.
This is it's not very flashy because, like I said, it's just a starter to show you how to get going. But this is using what I call just entities, which are standalone rendered consoles of smaller size. So they're more about, like, you have a guy on the screen walking around or something else that you kind of want to, you don't want to render him on the actual screen console, because then when he moves, you have to erase where he was previously, right, and then draw him in the new place. So this is more about moving entire consoles around the screen. So this is a one-cell console that when I use
It's a sort of composition engine, but text.
Yeah. So moving him around, I'm actually figuring out where he is, because this little guy is his own console. He's a one-by-one sized console. Moving him around, and then on the backing console, I'm drawing where he was on this previously. So tracking. I actually came up with this because there was a guy who wanted to do kind of a Zelda or a Pac-Man style kind of game, and he wanted to draw like a Tron, you know, path behind the guy, you know, so something like that. So I came up with this idea just to show how to use individually rendered consoles and interact with a different console.
So what makes up that guy? Is he alone a single sprite, or is he built up of multiple?
He is the exact same sprite sheet. So what I call the font sheets. He's the same one as the one being rendered behind him, but I've just set he's only a one by one, and I've set which character he is.
Okay.
This one is this is actually showing more of the performance, which is not going to come through on Google Hangouts because it's slow and scrolling. But I have a giant console, which I'll just try to start scrolling down to the bottom right. So this is actually scrolling nice and smooth and super fast on my screen. And what this code actually demos is, and I'll just stop it right there because it goes like 2,000 by 2,000, is having
it looks like your those books just crashed.
Yeah. So what I've done is, even though the screen size is 80 by 24, I've actually created a backing console in memory that's 2,000 by 2,000, and then I'm using a viewport to only render the subset of it. So this code is demonstrating moving the viewport around, so you can kind of think of like, you land on a giant planet or something, and you're walking around, but you're only going to show a little bit, because if you try to render the entire planet off-screen, you know, it would crawl to, you know, one frame rate. The way it works is each character that's on there is a sprite being rendered, and then each colored square behind them is a sprite being rendered. So, I don't know, I'm terrible at math for a programmer, but, you know, 80 by 24 times 2, 80 times 24 times 2, that's how many sprites are being rendered on the screen at one time, right? So if you were to do that 2,000 by 2,000 by 2, that would be a lot of sprites on the screen at once.
So it was basically a stress test.
Yep, it's the method's called generate random characters, you know, and it just randomly generates a bunch of massive characters, so...
It's funny, you know, I grew up when a lot of these characters were more present on computers, and some of them, particularly that little character that you had in the last screen, I haven't seen some of them in many years because they're just not present, you know, on the internet, right?
Yeah, we're using Unicode now, and all the characters are in different places, too. So the next... Let's see the next one. This is going to come off slow, but this was showing animation, a logo for my sad console.
He's so sad.
Wait, why is your console sad, by the way? What's up with that?
It's my sad is my initials. So my dad was a developer too, and he used to always sign his code as, you know, copyright sad. And so when I was a kid playing around with art and programming and stuff, I always signed mine as, you know, sad. So I just came up with sad console as it's my console, you know. So that goes by fast, but that code ends up demonstrating I've written a sort of instruction engine where you can chain multiple rendering techniques together and then play them back. I don't know if I have to close that to re-show that. I don't know. I'll try to go back through. It closes it down. So what that did was it slid rendering text down, you know, at a slant and then printed characters out on the screen for you. and then faded in a console, which was the, you know, the sad face. Go ahead.
Oh, I was gonna ask, is the sad face, so how is that being rendered? Are those individual characters, or?
Yes, so that is actually what I do is, I must share something else, that's why I closed that, but what I did was is I loaded a PNG, or a, you know, a bitmap file, and then I got the color of every single pixel, and then I just set the background color on the console to those pixels. So, just an easy technique of, you know, loading a graphic and then displaying a graphic. It's got to be pretty low resolution, you know, unless you make your console super high.
Yeah, he looked like a very, very sad face, but he looked pretty smooth.
Yeah, I need to add, like, a tear coming out of his eye and, you know, going down or something like that.
Yeah.
So let me show you, when you're coding a framework or an engine, you have to have a project to test all your code with. And so what I ended up doing was is anticipating, hey, I'm making a game with this, right? So I made sort of a scene editor, a console editor app that allows you to draw your consoles and then save them out so you can load them into your game later. And let's see if this renders. Yay. Let's let the compression catch up with that. And go to... I have some other stuff. I started a blog recently and just sort of talking about things that I'm doing, and I'll show that because I have some animated stuff I did on there. So, okay. Let's see. Google Hangout. There we go. All right. So this is my editor, and this is using the entire GUI system and demonstrating the different things I have. So, you know, for example, a list box, text inputs to type in, and then you saw the buttons earlier. So I'll just create a standard console, 60 by 60. And so this is for, you know, drawing on the screen. Let's see. Then I can type stuff on there. Same thing with drawing a line. Let's do this. You know, so a line control. Boxes, you know, filling in the inside of the box. I have, kind of a copy-paste stamp thing, so you can move stuff around the screen. Just basic, you know, kind of graphical editor functions. And then, so this is a list control like you saw earlier, but it actually scrolls up and down. I did little collapsible regions, so you can add multiple layers and show and hide them.
So what's a scenario where you'd want to do the layering?
So when I is you so because so a layer would end up being its own separate console. So you can do something like moving the background in front of the foreground, stuff like that. It also comes into management where if you want to show or hide things. So for example, if you're if your guy's walking around and you have a roof, and when you come to the door of something, you want to remove the roof so you can see inside the room. So you can show the roof on a separate layer and then hide that layer, you know, something like that.
I see.
Another thing I did was this is a pop-up window that has lots of controls for color selection. So I said this is a scrolling or a floating window you can move around. Now the other stuff here is, you know, doesn't interact. I can't play with that. So it's a modal window. And then just, you know, standard changing your colors. I added also, here's the standard text colors, your 16 colors from, you know, when you were doing original text. And then I used Reflection on .NET to pull out all the colors given by the game framework to then render each one, and then you can choose it. And then...
Oh, that's cool.
There you go. There's a fill. So this is the fill control, which uses character. So if the character is the same, then it fills across that. And So that's kind of the editor I was doing. I also, part of the editor too, is animation. So the entity, and I'll load, I have a few animations. I'm kind of working on kind of a space shooter game on the side, because the editor is pretty complete now. The engine's pretty complete. So now I'm actually, yay, I get to actually start making a game. And so I use the editor to do that. So let me go. Oh, this is my file selection control and window I made.
It's very fitting theme-wise for... Huh? I said it's very fitting theme-wise.
Yeah, so it was, style. You know, creating an entire app using the game engine to render the entire app as text.
Yeah, so. It's pretty amazing the fidelity you can have to modern UI concepts using just text.
Yeah, so it's actually, so technically this is actually a game, right? Because it's running in a game engine and it's just rendering to the screen. So, but this was a really great way to test and compose UI to make sure all my, you know, I found a ton of bugs making and using this program. I think this one is the one I want. Yeah, so in my space game,
I need to add a little preview to that dialogue here.
Yeah. So actually, the biggest thing I got going that I recently added was multi-documents. So I can go flip back and forth between...
Nice.
Open, because it was really annoying to do one animation and then have to close it down and load up a new animation and stuff like that. So,
is it essentially rendering then two consoles per... thing? How do you have that?
Based on the editor I'm using, so the animation editor obviously has different things like paging and adding different animations. It's not, animations and entities don't necessarily care about layering, because they're more about single elements that you animate and move around the screen, right? So layering in that aspect doesn't end up, isn't really important. So I don't use layering in the entity system. So the editor itself is different. So you can see there's actually an animations section where you can add and do that. So for example, the extend animation has 10 frames, and you can cycle through each frame, you know, as it moves out. So this was when you got hit by a missile or something. This would pop out of the screen saying, you know, warning, you're being targeted, and, you know, do flashing and stuff like that. So here's, it's just going to come by really horrible on, yeah, let me close that out. I might set the frame, the animation to take 2 seconds to play. And
so
then.
So I'm assuming it's smooth on yours and just kind of rendering.
It's very, yeah, so. It's not smooth, so I'll slow it down so that Google Hangouts picks up the frames and you can kind of see.
Oh, yeah, that looks a lot better.
How it works. Yeah. So on mine it pops out super fast, you know, and on the original one.
But really, so slowing that animation down was pretty fast. It was just a couple clicks.
Yep.
Right?
So
you didn't have to go back and remap everything to additional frames or anything. You really just changed the speed in seconds.
Yeah, so I have stuff like, you know, there's helper stuff like insert a frame here, clone the previous frame so I can draw little differences, you know, things like that to help creating the animations. So I'll show you what I call the game screen. This is kind of like, it's a standard console, but it implements a lot of helper typing and functionality to basically say, yes, I'm rendering stuff like a console, but I want to treat it differently. I want to do a little more with it. And I'm kind of still developing this game helper stuff. I have the core engine working, but I want to add in helper libraries and helper functions to... speed up the process of making a game with it. So this, let me import what I got for my space game. So this is where I'm drawing the HUD and the UI for the space game. So for example, that little pop-out thing you saw, it pops out right here at this spot and slides out.
That looks awesome.
I think I can...
I would totally play that.
I think I can actually run... I can run... I think I have a copy on the computer, and I can at least show you it working. But so this is me using the editor, and so for example, this is the HUD layer, which I can show and hide. The space layer, which is the new is actually, I never renamed the layer. This is the stars. I don't. So when I actually load this whole thing in, I actually erase all the other layers and only keep the HUD layer because I generate the stars behind the scenes, and that's just another console being shown behind. But when I'm editing, I wanted to see the stars so I can kind of get an effect of what it is. Yeah. My scratch layer is kind of my like I'll hide the HUD and show the scratch. This is kind of my playing with ideas of how to render or how do I want to draw stuff and you know how do I want panels to look, you know, shield levels. You know, this is the what the flashing of the lights on the panel would look like on and off. You know, it was kind of like my playing around, and then I used the tool to select and copy off to my actual HUD thing. So the other thing, let me show you. So at this point, you're kind of like, well, that's the same as a regular console. You got layers, so why is it a game screen? And this is where I have added, when you're in game screen mode, you have a new tool called Objects. And this is kind of like putting down metadata on the screen. And you and then you load that metadata by key ID, and you can do stuff. So, for example, this is the where the warning panel is, because the warning panel is a separate animation file. So if you, let's see, right-click to edit that, so here's the name of that, what it looks like, and if there's any flags. So what I do is when I'm loading my console up, or my game screen, this the HUD, I then load the warning animation, and then I look for where is this object placed on the screen, and then that's where I attach it on the screen. So it's used. I use it for positioning. The other thing I can do, too, is, for example, this energy bar, I added key value pairs. So I could say the energy bar is 21, which it's coming through blurry, but it's 21 characters wide. So if I go redesign the HUD, then I can sit there and reposition the energy HUD or the section and then tell it how big it's going to be, you know, things like that. So it's kind of what the game object system does. Is for creating metadata about your console for when you're composing it in your game. So, for example, here's another one, the engine speed. So this is saying where it is, how tall it's going to be, and then in the game, when I'm doing the throttle, I know my bounds and my limits for when I'm drawing the throttle on the screen. So any other questions about this? It's kind of, I think I'm pretty much done demoing the, at least the UI functionality and stuff.
Go ahead.
No, I was just, you go.
Yeah, I was only going to say one thing, which is it'd be great to see some source code.
Yeah.
Sure, yeah.
Right.
I can get into that. Let me see if I have, oh man, I've been working on the, getting AI into the game because I want to do a demo. So I have ships on the screen and shooting and stuff, and so I'm trying to write out the AI to do like the pirates targeting you and flying at you and shooting at you and doing stuff like that. So the problem is as soon as it boots up, it just starts in a battle, and there's only like two or three ships. So I want to see if I can demo and share fast enough. But
AI is always that fun, tricky little beast.
So what version of the code is sitting on here too? Oh yeah. Let me get, you know, let me switch over. I'll show code because then I can pull down the latest of the game and dead air is bad air. Okay, here we go. Oh, that's right. I have to use PowerShell to pull it down.
I have another question too, which I'll just state while you're working on that.
Sure.
Which is so for console, that's obviously what we're talking about. There's this set color and read color APIs. Mm-hmm. And I believe that both of those APIs work perfectly well in Windows, but we were not able to implement read color on Linux. And so I'm curious if you use read color at all, or if you kind of have perfect knowledge of what the colors were set to, so you don't actually rely on reading.
You're actually re-rendering the whole thing. You're
yeah,
not
so
actually
I'm not actually using the console API at all.
Yeah.
So I'm not using any Windows APIs for the whole thing. It's just straight. I have created the entire API to do the rendering.
Yeah, I'd love to see what that API looks like too.
Okay, yeah, let me load HKEY. Should have done this before. There we go. Okay, pulling down code and I'll share some code.
So you said you've been working on this for like 15 years?
Well, I started thinking about like I want to do there's no good library to do enhanced text gaming presentation for .NET. So that's when I kind of I mean there is now there's other libraries that are great. I think someone's called the Sunshine Console and RLNet roguelike.net is kind of and then another great library called Rogue Sharp, which a guy makes, and it's kind of about helpers, about making role-playing text-based games, you know, like dungeon generation and stuff like that, that you can then use with any presentation system. So I've been working with that guy doing code samples and stuff too for his library to hook into my library to do an old-school RPG like NetHack, you know, that kind of stuff. Let's make sure this actually compiles first. Oh, it doesn't. Okay, can I share on this computer for code?
Sure.
Is that fine? I know I kind of wanted to use a different one, but I actually have all the code open and because I'm constantly working on it. Let's see, Google Hangouts share. Do I have two Google Hangouts? Where did it go?
You're still here.
I know. I don't. Oh, there it is. Okay. All right. Share full screen. Okay.
Okay, we can see it.
Okay, so this is. So you can see code?
Yeah, you might want to bump up the font size here.
Yeah, oh, do this.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I actually just added a font to my system that's the original VGA.
Yeah, I was going to say that. It doesn't look like ConsoleOS.
No, it doesn't, and it doesn't zoom very good. It's you can see it kind of gets pixelated, which it looks okay, but you have to do like multiples of itself. Otherwise, it gets kind of blurry.
Oh,
but
I
kind of like it looking like, hey, I'm using, you know,
at least you're consistent.
That's right. So this is, I guess I'll just demo. Actually, let me go, because I was playing with the AI. Let me add AI back to these other ships.
So that code looks like very modern game code.
Yes.
It doesn't look like game code from the 80s.
Nope. So it's all written in C#. So in this, the game, so you can see I'm the throttle on the left, you know, going up and down based on my thing, my speed calculator on the very top left, and then when I'm shooting, my energy bar is going down. My shields on the top right, that's my shields, and so I'll stop and let them destroy me, and you'll see if they can. I have. There we go. They're going to get me in a second. Shoot me. Kill me. Come on. There we go. That animation kind of popped up fast of them. Anyways, so that was kind of like, a small game being in the middle of being written. So the way I do drawing and things, I'm actually going to load up the the helper project, because I do all sorts of fancy stuff in this. It's not straightforward, hey, here's how I'm drawing, here's, you know, those things. I need to figure out a way to turn off the syncing of settings with my Visual Studio, because it keeps, like at work, I'm not using that font, and it keeps overwriting itself, but it actually looks okay. So here is the starter project. And this is all in NuGet also. So
can you zoom in a bit?
What'd you say?
Can you zoom in?
Oh, sure. How's that?
Better.
Okay, so it's all in NuGet, and basically you just create a new project, an empty project, or it might have to be a Windows Forms. I'm not sure what the backing system. I think it's just a standard .NET empty project, and then you add the SAD console NuGet, which adds all the dependencies, and then pops you open to the GitHub wiki, which has a tutorial on, you know, starting out. So it's all pretty straightforward. Let's see, you want to get into drawing stuff. So let's do static console. Here we go. So the way the framework works is you, the way I use this is I inherit from my console type, so not the system.console, but the SAD console. I inherit from that, and that has a backing cell data, which represents that matrix of characters on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
And then that has a bunch of helper stuff like at this position, print this text. I want to create a colored string that's foreground light blue, background transparent, you know, print that over there.
What's the null reference you're passing in?
So I have a special effects system built into it to do stuff like blinking characters, fading characters in and out. It's something like that. So basically they're kind of override systems to change how something's going to be drawn, and you can pull an effect off of it. So for example, if I have an effect that changes the foreground of a character, if I apply that effect to a specific cell and then delete that effect, it restores it back to its original color. So the effects are layered on top of the backing data, and the backing data is not actually changed. So that's why I keep passing in null, because it's taking an effect, and I'm saying I don't want any effects added to this. So here's an example. I added a new blink effect, and the blink speed, 0.5, and I set that at this specific cell within this. I think it's like this character here. And I'll show you that real fast. Cancel that one, because that one takes time to generate. This isn't going to come up very big, is it, because of the screen resolution? All right, so there's that blink character. So the T with the foreground, the background, that data is still preserved. So if I delete that effect, it would just go back to looking regular. So that's kind of how the effect system works, doing gradients, doing things like that. And then, you know, so here's my set background, set foreground, and if we get into that code, all that's actually doing is setting the foreground color of the backing data. So the backing data is kind of like emulated the way, you know, the old systems were with a console or a screen. You know, if you wrote to video memory to say, what's the color of this character or on the screen, you know, not the character, but the one by one cell, what's the background color there. So I kind of emulated that structure with here's a cell, and it has a foreground, a background, a character, and a special effect added to it. So when I get into rendering, where is that? Let's see. Cell surface, no. Consoles. Here's the renderer. Go down to render. So here I get a position matrix, which is determining where on the screen are we doing this console. Because you can, like I sort of showed, you can have multiple consoles on the screen at once. You can size them. So you can split the screen up into different sections and draw specific things there. So this is the positioning code. Then all I do is I start looping through all the characters. You know, what's the... If the foreground is not transparent, then let's actually draw the foreground. And it's just standard X and A mono game draw code of, you know, where I'm drawing, what I'm drawing.
So are you redrawing everything on each frame? Or?
Yep. So yeah. Every frame. I previously had code where I kind of... I got into that habit of trying to perf your code before you needed to, right? Write everything.
Optimization.
I was doing, let's optimize everything from the start. Let's design everything completely optimized before I need to know, before I knew I had to. And that was kind of prohibiting me from designing things the way I wanted. Yeah. So what I previously was doing was I was tracking where every character would actually appear on the screen. And if something was on top and I drew it, then I would kind of lock that cell out so nothing would ever draw there again. And But that kind of crippled me with my flexibility of, you know, oh, I didn't have multiple consoles back then because, you know, well, then I have to track multiple consoles. And if they're different sizes and if they're different using different fonts that are different sizes, you know, how does all that work? And so I just threw away that code and just said, no, I want to design the most expansive, flexible system that I can, and then if I have performance problems, come back. But
yeah, make it work the way you want first, and then make it
Yeah,
fast.
And so, but I did a, I recently did a perf test on it, and, you know, I was getting 1,000 frames a second doing a 200 by 200 giant screen console that was moving and scrolling and stuff, so I'm like, you know, it really doesn't matter. And then while I was doing that, I found, oh, here's a really cheap way I can do a performance and almost double my performance. So, but sometimes you might end up with something, you know, like when you have multiple layers, right? So if I have 16 layers, they're all within the same area. So building performance into that where I detect, you know, has the topmost layer drawn here, then don't process the other layers for that, you know. So there's optimization I can put in later at specific things and specific ways. Let's see. What other code can I show?
Yeah, because your layers are not... They are not like rectangles. You have holes in the layers, right?
Yeah, technically, you could. So the layer itself is a rectangle because you have bounds. You have this many cells by this many cells. Yeah. But within that, you may have a transparent cell, right? So I already have optimization to sit there and say, if I'm rendering the color transparent or the alpha of the cell is fully transparent, then I skip it, you know, things like that. What was I going to show? Oh, you know, I have some quick demo games, too, that a friend of mine did. He did, like, a Nokia Snake game from the old phones. It's in examples. Oh, wait. I removed it from this project. Never mind. Visual Studio is not very happy with 17 different projects targeting macOS and Linux and Windows, and it was getting messed up on something. So I made a separate solution that was just what I usually work on day to day. Here's the fonts. So I'll show you what the font looks like, which is going to be kind of... There we go. Oh, good. It did get the...
Yep. So this is what you're referring to as like the sprite sheet, right?
This is the sprite sheet. So it's cell by cell, you know, so character 0 in the keyboard matrix is here, character 1 in the keyboard matrix is here, and so on, all the way down through character 255 right here. Now,
so could somebody technically make their own little characters then?
Yep. So when I was researching how to render characters, you know, and things like that, I came across a game called Dwarf Fortress, which is a giant ASCII. You manage a dwarf underground simulation.
Yeah, it has a cult following.
Yes, it's very popular. And so what people have done is they have taken fonts and created their own sprite sheets and things. So when I saw how they were doing characters like this, I thought, oh, that makes sense. That's That's exactly how to map the characters to the keyboard matrix easily, is by positioning them where they appear. And then, you know, for my playing around, I think I lifted this off of their website or whatever, but so thank you guys, and I'm not mad, but you know, I think that they'd be happy with, you know, anybody's doing ASCII stuff, you know, is hopefully happy. But the way it works is it actually, I define how many columns there are, sort of 16 by 16. So 16 columns, 16 rows. But the way my code works is I don't use a character type, so it's not 0 through 255. It's actually, I use an integer type, so you can actually sit there and say the character in here is actually 756, which would error out saying your sprite sheet doesn't have 250 or 726, whatever I said. But you can actually extend the sprite sheet lower and lower and lower with extra characters. So you can kind of make multiple sprite sheets, do special UI, you know, tweaking, different things like that, and keep your standard text stuff still in it. But then when you're using the editor and stuff like that, you can draw extra stuff. So you may have like a Zelda type of game where you actually have a crate that looks like a crate, right? Albeit in 2D and low resolution. Or a stairway. You know, you could have stairs that go up or down and they look like stairs or something. So you can add graphics, extra graphics, without having to replace some existing character you may be using.
Yeah, so you keep the look of ASCII, but not the limitations.
Exactly, yep. And then there's just a small XML file that's defines, you know, how is the graphic laid out so I can pull the individual sprites from it. And then I kind of built in like a, hey, well, if I name this the IBM font, but if I have seven different font sizes, then I can add an option into the game to say, well, I'm on super high resolution, so I want to use the font that's actually bigger. And so I built in a way to use a font family and then specify a size. So this is the 16 by 8 font, and if you implemented a square font, 16 by 16, you know, then you could change to it or something like that.
Nice.
And that's actually what the editor is using. It's using a square font because that's usually the more... a lot of games use square fonts instead because of, you know, you're moving characters around the screen, and it takes... If you don't use a square font, it takes you double the left and rights to move your character across the screen than it does to go up and down. So it kind of feels funny.
Mm.
So this is actually using a square font, which, you know, you might not have noticed till I actually said it. So
this will pull in those different sheets for you to work with then?
Yeah, I didn't add UI to configure it, but there's a JSON file behind the scenes that lets you say, well, what character, you know, do I want? How big do I want the game window? What do I want the default sizes? So you can kind of, I'm working on my game, and these are all the defaults I use for my game. So I've actually set it to use the font I'm using in my space game currently, but you could set it to the, you know, 16 by 8 or 8 by whatever IBM font if that's what your game is going to use.
Pretty cool.
So it's a full game engine. So what do you have in terms of collision detection? What does the game loop look like?
Yeah, so when you're making your game, and you know, I'll load up the one I was working on, Ensign. So all my resources. Here's the game, and I've kind of, you know, I'm still playing around with this. So I have a bunch of code that's just sort of, you know, I'm working on AI, so I just generate some ships in the screen, and you know, I'm playing with that. But normally, you wouldn't have that. I'm loading, you know, here's my data for, you know, what are the shields and the batteries and the engines in the game, stuff like that. But to start, all you have to do is do an initialization routine, tell it which font you're going to use.
Can you bump up the font a little bit?
Is that better?
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, quick initialization, turn, you know, I want to use the mouse with this game, so, you know, I turn that on. Here's the font I'm going to use. And then I create a console, and oh, that was my splash screen, which I let me see. This is actually loading my game data, really. But all you have to do is say is add a console to this rendering stack. So this will just render multiple consoles one after the other. And so you just have to put in what you're going to render. The active console is the one that receives the keyboard input. And then I've resized my game window to be what I've set, you know, whatever characters by whatever characters. So what this does is if you say you're using a font that's 16 by 16 and you want your game is going to be rendering a console that's 10 by 10. How many pixels does that actually put on the screen? That's what this sort of does. Is it resizes the game window to match exactly what your graphical console is. So that's what that does. And then in the update and draws, I just, because I'm using a component, which is a thing that XNA has, which Unity does, you know, composition, object composition.
Mm-hmm.
I made a component to make it easy. So this component type actually handles rendering and drawing for you, which is actually just one-liner calls. And here I normally would, you would just go add console, engine, draw, and then pass in the... That actually draws all the consoles you've told the engine about. It does all the drawing for you. And the same thing with update. And types have an update method so that when you do your game logic in that. So technically, that's all you have to do to actually render something on the screen. And then you're just manipulating the data behind the scenes. So in the in here... in the game. So here's this is that stack of consoles. And so I'm saying I want to render all these consoles. And then I added some game logic down in the update that says, hey, what's the current console we're showing? Whenever I hit the F1 key, move to the next console and then hide all the other consoles. So that's how I get this effect of, as for the demo, I'm showing a single console, and when I hit F1 I go to the next console and the next console, and you know.
And so you're deriving from what here?
My own system. Okay. Oh no. So you mean for the game?
Okay. So you have a base game class, and that comes from the virtual update and draw.
Yeah, that comes from right now. This is all using Mono Game, so this is the standard class they provide, which is from XNA. So this is all the basic stuff. And so when you actually create a new project from scratch, add the SAD console NuGet, it actually will generate this whole file with you already filled out with all the stuff.
Nice.
So then all you have to do is this part here where you actually start creating a console of some sort and adding it to the render stack. And then everything else just works by default.
Can you just press F12 on that game class so that people see? Yeah.
So the Mono Game framework, which is, they use the same namespaces as XNA's for compatibility. But yeah, here's all the other stuff.
Very nice. That's actually about all the time we have for today. This was really fun. I really enjoyed that.
Can I just say one thing?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
It just reminds me of one little experience, which is I remember... being a kid, and my parents bought us an EGA monitor, and the kids down the street only had a CGA monitor, so we could definitely play much better games. I did play some both text-based games and UI games, but it reminded me of this transition from CGA to EGA, and obviously other stuff came after that. Anyway, that's my little story.
Yeah, I started on Texas Instruments and Atari computers, so I only tried the PC much later than that.
I'll actually contribute my ability to type extremely fast to playing MUD text-based role-playing games when I was a kid.
Nice.
You had to type fast to not die.
Yeah. So the thing I wanted to finish on is if some of the people watching this want to play with this and want to start their own text-based game, where do they go?
So the it's all the source code's on GitHub. So if you do a search for Sad Console on GitHub, you'll find it pretty easy. The roguelike dev Reddit, I'm frequently on there. And what else? I started a blog.
Are there any samples that people can look at? Is your okay?
So if you go to the GitHub and go to the wiki on GitHub, there's documentation. Not a lot. I'm working on a tutorial blog series on there of creating a role-playing game from scratch. There is. In the code repository, there's two sample games a friend of mine made, which was Snake, and then I can't remember the name of this game, but it's a guy who made an old game in BASIC that was text where you walked around a castle collecting stuff. So there's two games there, and then the Starter Project is also there, which has a lot of samples of just how to do stuff.
Excellent. Do you have anything up for grabs for people who would want to actually contribute to the project?
Oh, yeah. So I pull requests and everything. I had a guy who came by and he redid all of the structure of the whole project and added the macOS and Linux port stuff that he tested in there. And then, you know, so there's a few forks coming out that people are doing stuff. And so I really hope it keeps picking up and going that way because I love working with other people on it and stuff.
So, excellent.
Yep.
Well, thanks again. And, well, we'll see you people of the internet next week. And I don't know who will be on the show next week yet.
Can I do a quick shout-out?
Oh, yeah, please do.
Okay, so if you guys want a really cool text game, modern text game, go check out Cogmind. I think it's about $20 for purchase, and this guy is amazing. It's a futuristic strategy. He was doing a XCOM ASCII game at one point that was amazing, and he's transitioned into doing his own full game from scratch. It's a really cool, amazing animation. He's not using Sad Console, he's using C++ in his own engine, but it's a really cool game, Cogmind.
Cool. Yeah, why don't you send me an email with all those links, and we'll put them in the description.
Cool, okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.